There are millions of Europeans who want peace, who think we are on the wrong path.
Here are the faces of teens that were killed in the last couple of weeks. Who is behind those deaths? It's Elon Musk and another person, Alex Karp. Why? Because Karp and Musk and a lot of others think that that's how they will affect psychological conditions of Russians. By killing their kids.
I think your theory is, with all due respect, is totally rubbish.
Well, Roger, first of all, I have to say that you very bravely spoke with the Deutschland warmongers, trying to put some sense into their heads, trying to tell them that catastrophe, as of now, seems to be almost inevitable, that we're moving toward world war conflict of the epic scale that no one even can right now realize what are they doing. What was the response on your speech?
Good morning, Vladimir. Indeed, this is a topic, and also thanks to you and your clear assessments of things that concerns. Let me phrase it like this, concerns are growing. And I mean, we are in the middle, in the fog of war. It's very hard to know things, especially when you look at it from outside. But I'm really concerned about the developments. I think that we are actually on a very, very dangerous path. And I share your analysis, and this is like the worst case scenario we are heading. What is the reaction? And I think this is very important to realize also for your viewers and for the Russian audience. There is growing, and I would say massive concern in Germany as well. And we see a huge cognitive dissonance between the rhetoric of some of the leaders, which are very weak, and, you know, the whole perception of the public. I would say those people who take it seriously, they have the same fears as we have. And then there are some who would say, well, no, come on, don't overdo it. I mean, this is out of question. And of course, a lot of people are brainwashed by wishful thinking and a very one-sided propaganda in the West, which makes our program, I dare to say, quite historical, that we have here, I don't want to overstate it, but we have here a conversation which is really unique. And it's not just, you know, two media guys, you know, feeling great about communicating. It's really important to have this kind of exchange in order to open the eyes. So I received standing ovations for a very gloomy speech, for a speech which was addressing all the critical issues and the perspectives. And it was important because it was at the Reichstag in Germany. It was in front of the largest opposition party. And you can be sure that I urged the German politicians to address these issues in the public arena, in the political arena, in order to bring to senses their leadership, because they are stumbling into a war which they are not up to handling. And this is not serious politics we see. And the great problem that I notice in Europe, also partially in Switzerland, that there is not just, you know, a total blockade of diplomacy and conversation with Russia, but it's also within Europe. The conversation has been blocked. And everybody who brings up these concerns and says, come on, listen to what Russia is saying. It doesn't mean we have to accept it, but we have to take notice. We have to take it into account. Then you are, of course, branded as a soulless, brainless Putin propagandist, as this kind of fifth column of the forces of evil. And this is a very, very dangerous development. We didn't have it since 1945. We never had it during the Cold War. And this means that the leaders in Europe, they're somehow in a black hole of their own choosing as far as information is concerned. But Russia has to notice, and I think it's important to push through here, there are millions of Europeans who want peace, who think we are on the wrong path. It's not the way we should go. And of course, we see also that the whole, you could say, the motivation of young people to fight in the army, it's nowhere. I mean, these strategists, these militarists without military are in an orbit of recklessness, which I honestly haven't seen for a long time. And I can only explain it by the fact, by the good old Goethe, who said, nothing is harder to bear than a series of good days. What we are confronted here is a strange mixture of moralism, self-aggrandizement, decadence due to material success in the last 30 years, but now we have the sobering effects of reality, of recession. And I think it's a very important, this is my last point, it's very important for people like you, communicators, journalists, to enlighten and to show what's at stake. And you should sometimes try to do it in a mild language, because then you do not force the other side to take up the guns as well. Provocation is very good. You're a master of it. But sometimes a milder rhetoric, a more concerned rhetoric, as you displayed just before, is probably more efficient. So that's the central assessment. Standing ovations in Germany, in Berlin, at the Reichstag for such a speech, which at least gives some, is a silver lining of kind.
I told you before we started this program that, and I do apologize because emotionally it's going to be hard. I just want you to have an opportunity to get into the soul of Russian people and just project what I'm going to say to mothers and fathers in Europe and in the United States. Hear the faces that I'm showing right now. Here are the faces of teens that were killed in the last couple of weeks. Starobielsk. Kids that were killed, 21 of them, from 14 to 18 years old. 21 out of 86. They were killed. Gorlovka, May 25. Due to the drone attack, 4 kids were killed. They were born in 2012 and 2014. May 31st, Genichesk. The boy was killed. He was 6 years old. Ukrainians attacked just apartment complex. June 19, Zhukovsky, it's near Moscow. The girl was 8 years old. She was in the house with her grandmother. She died in flames. June 25th, Crimea. Stanislav Pruglo. He was on the 9th grade of the college. He was killed there. Bryansk, June 25th. Drone attacked civilian car. 23-year-old driver and 15-year-old girl were killed. They had nothing to do with Russian military at all. Yesterday, Yegorivsk. It's near Moscow. little, a year and a half. The boy was a year and a half. He was killed. Why? Why is that? No, I mean, how comes that just for this short period of time, Ukrainians were killing mainly kids? On the June 17th near Bryansk, Ukrainians attacked bus that was carrying kids' football team. Four boys were wounded, and an adult that was with them died. Who is behind those deaths? I want to show you the faces of those people whom I personally think are guilty. First of all, it's a well-known trillionaire of this world. It's another guy. Show me both of them. It's Elon Musk, who is dreaming of Mars. But nowadays, all of those killings were done thanks to Starlink. Elon Musk gave permission to hit targets inside Russia. Sarabelsk, we found parts of the drones. They were with Starlink. And actually, some of the details came from Germany. And another person who is personally involved in every killing on the territory of Russia is this, Alex Karp, who hates kids. He stated that he hated family, traditional families and kids. And he proudly announced that Palantir is behind every single attack of Ukrainian drones on Russian soil. So he is the one who hates kids. He must be extremely proud of killing Russian kids. That's his personal fault. His and Elon Musk. So when you ask European taxpayers, what happens with their money? The answer is, you paid for killing of Russian kids. Percentage of kids that were killed during last month is extraordinarily high. And according to us, it's not collateral damage. They're our kids that were killed by two meaningless punks that decided that they can decide who's going to live and who's going to die. Those two satanic creatures are killing our angels. And you, European taxpayers, paid for their sins. Just take a wild guess. What are the emotions in Russian hearts when we have to bury those girls from Starobelsk in the wedding gowns? In the wedding gowns, some of them were planning to get married, but those marriages won't ever happen. Alex Karp, Elon Musk, and you, European taxpayers, that do think once again that you are Obermensch and you can kill Untermensch in Palestine, Iran, Lebanon, Venezuela, Russia, and everywhere else. What emotions are in the hearts of Russian people and Russian soldiers? Don't ask for mercy afterwards. And that's what I want people that do think that war is far away from them to keep in mind. Once again, it will be May 9th. And people in Germany, as in 1945, will say, we had no idea of what German soldiers, basically European soldiers, were doing on Russian soil. And we had no idea about concentration camps. We had no idea about satanic Hitler regime. Nowadays, you do have exact idea of what you are doing. At the same time, you are behind the Ukrainians, and here's the payback for all the money that you sent to them. Not only Nord Stream pipes, but now this political assassination in Monaco. Even French press is admitting that it's done by Ukrainian services. Have you seen Ukrainian ambassadors being sent out of France and Monaco, Germany, whatever, if there is anyone in Monaco? No. Have you heard even one word saying that we should consider sanctions against Ukraine? No. Double standards? But of course. Of course. It's quite emotional for us, Roger. That's why my words are harsh. And that's why when I look at polished European political leaders stating that, oh, Russia should be strategically defeated, there's only one question that I have to ask. As my grandfather, my father, my grand-grandfather was asking, like all Russian grand-grandfathers, where shall we bury you all? Why is it that every single generation of Europeans willing to die on our soil? Why is that? Please do stop until it's too late. Just stop. I was trying not to use rude words, as he asked me to.
May I react?
Sure.
I think you're absolutely right in putting this very clear and in concerned language, of course, into the spotlight. I agree with you. It's these double standards, this humanitarian rhetoric on the one hand, and the face of war on the other hand, it's appalling, it's disgusting. And I often feel ashamed as, you know, a Swiss in the middle of all of it. Also, as some of the utterings of my government are concerned with neutrality, Swiss neutrality, I'm a strong defender of it. I'm fully aware of it, that Russia made a huge contribution, that Russia as a country, as a nation, has never caused us problems in Switzerland. We had never a war with you. And one could even argue that the Americans, with their economic policies, did more harm to Switzerland. This is all true. And again, it's important to show the dimension of the war. And what you're displaying here, of course, is the abyss, is the how do you call that in English? It's the terrible reality of war, which of course is felt in Russia. And this is why I think it remarkable that your President Putin, in his last speeches, still preserves a very disciplined rhetoric, a decisiveness. We might talk about it, how you
sure
interpret all these things. But of course, you have to keep in mind that there is always another side of the story. And if you show these images, and I can imagine what is the emotional effect in a lot of Russian hearts, you have to keep in mind that there are also other pictures occurring. And people who have another attitude towards this war than me, they would argue, they would say, well, this is all terrible, we agree, but it was not Elon Musk, it was not Alex Karp who decided that Russian troops entered Ukraine. This was a decision taken by your leadership. And now one can argue what are the reasons behind these decisions.
I can answer the same reasons were behind the decision.
Just let me finish the point. I will just give it back to
Sure.
you. And this was a deliberate decision that was taken by the Kremlin for the military special operations. They had their reasons. They had good reasons for that from the Russian side. They take it very seriously. But of course, if you enter this hell of war, this is exactly what happens. Hell is unleashed. And now, last point, what does it mean for us? What does it mean for you? It means that if you are seriously interested in not letting the world explode, you have to somehow bear these terrible things and work as much as you can towards ending this hell, towards ending this catastrophe. And this is the danger of moralism on both sides. I mean, we have guys
We have
who
to take
never stop
you.
accusing the Russians all day
We have
long, and
to.
they are stirring up hatred, which is very dangerous. Please
Yeah, we'll
respect.
continue.
I totally sympathize with your point, but
I agree,
not,
but
not,
I
let's
agree that
keep.
we have to continue. But I have to take a break for a second, then, and we'll get. But
Sure.
before we get to this news break, one little question. If you are the Almighty, if you are the Creator, if you are God, and nowadays you look from the heaven on this world, you really want to save it?
100%.
We'll continue immediately after the break.
100%.
What the response will be from the Ukrainian side, saying, come on, Russian started it, it's Russians' fault, it's a collateral damage that happens, people do. Wrong answer. Because it started back in 2014. That's why in Donetsk there is the Alley of Angels. Those are kids that were killed by Ukrainian soldiers, Ukrainian forces in Donbas. So they started killing kids quite some time ago. That's part of their satanist ideology, may I say. It's hard to believe in it, but if you read Alex Karp and what he has to say about family and kids, there are certain concerns. The second most important thing is that Palantir is saying that we do know where we target. That's the difference. It's not artillery shell. It's not a cannon. We do know where we go. At Starobelsk, before they killed girls, they were investigating. They were controlling the airspace. They were looking. They knew exactly whom they were killing. Actually, as you know, there are cameras on those drones. So they see the faces of people they are killing at the last moment. They knew exactly. So it's not collateral damage. They were planning to, and they killed teenagers. So it has nothing to do with even who started the war. They're not killing soldiers. They made the choice to kill teenagers. Why? Because Karp and Musk and a lot of others think that that's how they will affect psychological conditions of Russians. By killing their kids, they will explain to Russians that, come on, you have to stop. It's an attempt of Alex Karp's previously philosophical ideas to be implemented on a new level of technological warfare. Fuck, he's wrong. He has no idea what Russian character is. Okay, you wanted to ask questions about Putin.
No, I have to react to this, what you're saying. I think your theory is, with all due respect, is totally rubbish. It's illogical. I mean, if you want to terrorize the civilian population, if you want to kill kids, You don't need very expensive, sophisticated AI technology. There are simpler, more primitive means in order to terrorize the civilian population. I don't believe in Satanism, by the way. I think this is just part of the overall craziness which occurs in war, because we have the same kind of rhetoric in Europe. I mean, they say the same thing about Russia, about Putin. He's the devil. He's a Satan. All this crap. I don't believe in it. I'm a Calvinist from Switzerland, and I'm very
That's why you
suspicious.
always have to
If
fight
human
sense of
beings,
humor,
well,
yeah,
nobody's
right, yeah.
perfect. If human beings start to use God or the devil as their proxies to fight their wars, no, I have to, I'm afraid it's human beings. It's human decisions that shape these terrible things. You ask, is the world, should the world be saved? Of course, Vladimir. I mean, are you surprised? I mean, you know the history better than I do. You know the Bible better than I do. L read the
The
Old
rainbow.
Testament.
You're getting me
Read the
back
Old
to
Testament,
rainbow
the Jewish
sign.
people, everybody. We are bastards since our creation. And that this is, by the way, a proof of God that human beings, human race still exists. Because if we were left
So you
alone, if
believe
there
in
was
God.
no God, we would
As a
have killed each
Calvinist,
other.
you believe in God.
And then a sec, sure. And then the
So
second
why don't
point.
you accept the existence of Satan in this case?
Well, this would lead us now into a very sophisticated theological discussion that the definition of Satan and devil by Karl Barth and Johann Calvin, it would go too far. Let me bring another point.
And
One
this
face
absolutely wrong
was missing,
direction, yeah.
Vladimir.
Yeah.
One face was missing up on the wall, the most important one. And this is where I think you have a very strong point. Who decides? Who is the commander of these attacks? This is President Zelensky in Ukraine. And this is something which concerns me, which I am afraid. I see that without Satan, without God, just like the pure interest, the European Union, the leadership, has somehow delegated its foreign policy to President Zelensky, who escalates at will. And I see a pattern there. I hope I'm wrong. I see a pattern of provoking the bear, of provoking Russia with even terrible attacks. I don't want to say they do it deliberately. I don't have the information. But of course, it is in the interest of Ukraine to escalate this war, to create a very strong reaction from Putin in order to show the West, you see, the Russians, they are Satans, they are devils. Look at what they're doing, how they are striking back. Now NATO has to enter the war. And this is the very dangerous, extremely dangerous path that these provocations can lead to. And this is why I think it's very important that President Putin keeps his nerves calm, and we have to go out of this hellish escalation dynamics. But the responsible politician in that sense here, of course, is President Zelensky, who has an interest in escalating the war. I do not even judge it. I do not even morally, qualify it. I just say this is the dangerous dynamics we are in. You don't need to use Satan or God to show the urgency of the situation.
Well,
And
first of
Russia has
all,
a responsibility too, because you escalated in 22.
of course not. And I probably have to give some background. Why kids? During presidential term of Pyotr Poroshenko, he came up with very emotional speech of Ukraine, Pyotr Poroshenko. He was stating that our kids will go to school and their kids, talking about kids of Donetsk, will be hiding on the ground floors. We will have light and they won't. We will have heat and they won't. And he was stating that they were creating hell for kids of Donbas.
Poroshenko said that.
Poroshenko, yeah. He stated that. So that's why there is a tradition of this hatred toward kids. So it's not like it came from nowhere. Secondly, when the war started of 14, it was quite obvious, it was not 22, it was 14, that we're dealing with completely different religious groups. And when you're speaking about settings as just an expression, what we figured out back in 22, that ideology of a lot of, let's say, ultra-radical groups was a mixture of national socialism and satanism, with icons, with cult, with tattoos, with all those absolutely theatrical deeds. So when I'm saying those words, it's not just a phrase. It's an analysis of information that we were gathering about groups like Azov, like Tornado, like a lot of others. They have their own Satan cult that they followed. And in Ukraine, it's part nowadays of a very specific culture with a lot of devil-related activities with witches. It's incredible, but even now with Mindich Gate and with all those high-rank officials in Ukraine, it turned out that they had the fortune tellers, mind tellers, witches that were doing rituals, going to the cemetery. So absolutely things that you start reading, you have a feeling that they must be completely nuts from Middle Ages. Like it's not happening. But that's the reality of modern Ukrainian political circles. It's incredible. They go to the cemetery and they dig a ground from the grave of currently dead people to bring it and do all those things that it's complete madness. Complete madness. But that's the reality they live in. That's why when I'm using those words, satanism, it's not a manner of speech. I'm just, it's a constatation of facts. The weirdest one, Yermak was deeply involved into a satanic cult doing all those witchcrafts with a specially trained witch that were influencing decisions on whom should be working for the Ukrainian government on what position. It's complete madness. And now when you're saying that Zelensky is controlling Europe, yes, he does. But no one is asking questions. How come? How come that people that were ideologically saying were hired by taxpayers of Europe, how come that they're not ruling anymore in the interest, for the interest of Europeans, but they are working for the benefit of extremely corrupted regime that you don't want me to use the term Nazis. But look at what modern the Polish political leaders are saying. They much more agree with me than with you. So they do see Nazis in the Ukrainian government. And when you're saying that, what I have to say, my theory is rubbish because it's extremely expensive, I have to disappoint you. The FPV drones, they cost almost nothing. It's extremely cheap. It's much cheaper than even sometimes traditional weapon that's been used. So it doesn't cost much. But in Slavic, so there's a huge place for kids. Huge place for kids. So what they're doing right now, they're trying emotionally, and Zelensky is stating that, I'm bringing war back to Russian people. We want Russian people to suffer so they will come to Putin and tell him to stop the war. And that's what Western propaganda is also trying to claim. Vice versa. We are, after all this, telling Putin only one thing. No mercy. We have to win this war. No mercy. And Putin, by the way, he's extremely, let me put this, he's much less emotional than most people of us. But he loves kids. He's doing a lot for Russian families. We have the best working system of supporting families and the childbirth. And it's important as far as we're concerned. And actually, you should pray that Putin stays as long as it possible. Because people that, let's say, work for Putin, some of them, they are not pro-democrats. Let's say, not pro-Westerners. We have those as well. Comprador shit, although exists in our country. But a lot of guys are much harsher. Much harsher.
My point was, in my speech in Germany, I was saying that, referring to you...
By the way, just a sec. Let me show it to you, because it's with subtitles.
Робота буде, у них немає. У нас пенсії будуть, у них немає.
Щоб субтитри були видні.
У нас піклування під дітей, під людей, під пенсіонерів, під дітей буде, у них немає. У нас діти підуть до школи, до дитячих садків. У них вони будуть сидіти в підвалах. Бо вони нічого не вміють робити. І так, і саме так ми виграємо цю війну.
I'm not sure. Let me, for your audience, just read the the subtitles. So what was saying President Poroshenko? Then you'll have the exact knowledge of Ukrainian thoughts. Because we will have jobs and they will not. We will have pensions and they will not. We will have care for our children and retirees. They will not. Our children will go to school and kindergartens. Their kids will sit in bomb shelters, basements. They don't know how to do anything. This is how we will win the war. That was their idea since 2014. So Zelensky just inherited this attitude from Poroshenko.
What's your assessment now of the Putin speech, the president, and the interviews he gave to Russia One?
To my colleague Pavel Zarubin, yeah.
Yeah, right. What is the most important takeaway that the European audience should take from these speeches? And the second question is, do you think
first of all that
it is really Do you think it is really necessary for Russia to escalate the war into Europe? Because as far as I see the situation, we have a lot of development at the front line. We see the Russian troops are standing in front of the gates of Kramatorsk. They have entered Konstantinovka. It seems not to be true what some, especially German newspapers, are writing endlessly, that, you know, they are knocked down. There are no progress and the battlefront. Yeah, how do you see the future of this war, and how do we assess Putin's speech?
What German papers? Are they there?
That's just the overall mainstream thinking that Russia has a lot of problems and the front line, but it's obviously
front line,
not true.
Well, I just visited one of the Russian military troops that for the last month liberated 300 square kilometers. Just there. It's toward Kharkov. Liberated from Nazi, the land of Kharkov gubernia. Konstantinovka is almost finished. The announcement will be in a couple of days, as well as Krasny Liman. Every single day, almost every single day, we announce of liberation of yet another point. Ukrainians cannot even mention even one single little village where they are, that they're liberated. Where are those kilometers that they're stating? Every week I'm going to the front line, I talk with our guys, I see what the situation is. They were stating that they're killing more Russians that are signing with the military. It's complete bullshit. Not even close. The exchange of bodies shows that we kill times more than Ukrainians. The situation on the front line is absolutely controlled by Russian troops, and we're advancing on every single direction. And President Putin showed that he knows exactly what's happening and he controls it on a daily basis. So he does know pretty well, and we have a lot of ways of... Even look at the Ukrainian sides. They were told not to show the exact location, and now and then they're stating that Pokrovsk and other place, they have to withdraw their troops. It's bullshit. I've been there in December. It's been liberated for like half a year. And only now Ukrainians are saying, oh, by the way, yeah, we've lost those cities. I've been there with my own legs. I know what I'm talking about. The German guys have no idea. Yeah. Putin, first of all, he's not affected by the recent events. Yeah, there's a problem with gas. We'll solve it. Yes, there's a problem with civil infrastructure in Crimea that's been hit. We'll manage. We have our targets, and everything will be completed. We won't stop. Whatever you're trying to do will just bring the hardships on those that are fighting us. If Europe doesn't understand, and if we have to, we'll have to take measures. We're not emotional. We're extremely pragmatic. We're winning this war. And it has zero influence on us of what you have to yell, what you have to lie, what they have to say, unrespected Ukrainian officials. We consider you a bunch of terrorists. You're not a legitimate force. You're not a legitimate voice of Ukrainian people. You're a terrorist. And Europe, make up your mind. We will not fight with you with conventional weapon. And we will not consider you as a part of... negotiation as a mediator. You're not. You're the side on this conflict. But Putin is saying, we're always open for honest and free negotiations.
Do you think?
For this purpose, you have to read what we've stated and realize that that's it. And it will be as we stated before. Take it or leave it. But
you
pay
said
the
to
price.
Me. Yeah. You said to me in our first interview that you criticize your president every day. And do you think that he's too restrained in this war? Do you still think that? Do you still think that? Are you disappointed by the speech of Putin? Do you think he should have?
No, I'm not disappointed at all, because I realize, first of all, that he has much more info than I do. Mm. And the level of responsibility is times higher. So I do realize that, you know, a country shouldn't be run by journalists, cab drivers, and singers. So
don't underestimate the journalists. Don't underestimate.
Well, after Mussolini, it's hard to underestimate all the problems that they create.
Well, he's the exception who confirms the rule. But let me ask you another thing. What concerns me at the moment? I mean,
but I will definitely. Yeah. I will definitely destroy all those, the infrastructure of those cities that are used as a base for military attacks on Crimea, Belgorod, Bryansk. I will once again, I'll make an announcement for the civilians to leave those places. Mm-hmm. And they will completely wipe them off.
Now, let me ask
Americans, by the way, doing the same thing without telling civilians to leave those places.
You know what concerns me at the moment is, if I look a bit in the future, what is coming out of all of this? Let's assume Russia achieves, it looks like this, all its military goals. They get Donbass, you know, the Ukrainian army cannot resist. We have a situation. What's happening then? I mean, Is there going to be an end of the war, or are we embarking on an eternal conflict? I mean, if Russia is achieving its goals, there is no need to escalate into a
Of
world
course.
war. But I mean, if the West
As
continues
far as
to,
we're concerned.
this is the thing, because you see, there is such an intense European, at least rhetorical, determination to stop Russia, to fight Russia, to bring a strategic defeat to Russia, which Russia cannot accept. What do you think? What will happen if Russia achieves its goals in this war? Have these goals changed? Will they say now, in
No,
current circumstances,
our
we have to
goals
advance
were.
further, we have to take
No,
Kiev?
no, no. We
What, what's
don't
the
have.
future?
Why? We never wanted to take Kyiv. This bullshit was in the head of American administration. What's the purpose? To take Kyiv to do what? It's absolutely. It's modern warfare. It's completely different. You have 150 million Russians. Why do we have to control 25 million Ukrainians? We only deal with people that are willing to become our citizens. We're not planning to conquer anyone, to do stuff like this. Putin never claimed that. Yes, for the military purposes, we can go and do certain things. But what happens afterwards? We stated it. In December 2021, Putin sent a letter to NATO countries and to the United States where we raised concerns about our security for years to come. That's about it. Our goals are extremely easy to understand and accept. We have zero interest in fighting Europe. Zero. But you invested heavily into this war. Will you be able to stop after all the investment has been made? That's a question for our next discussion. Unfortunately, the time is so cruel. It's so cruel. Thank you, Roger, so much. Today, I was not even using any harsh words. I behaved.